Hello, and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Today on the show is Ashley Bell. She's an actress, but over the past 5 years, she's worked on a documentary that she directed and produced called Love and Bananas, an Elephant Story. In it, she goes on the rescue of an Asian elephant named Noina. Now, before I watched this, I already loved elephants. But I have to say, the film does a really incredible job at humanizing these giant animals and showing off their incredible qualities and intelligence, their empathy, their memory, their personalities. There's just no way that you could watch this documentary and not be really fascinated by elephants afterward. And while her film brings to light the dangerous and unfortunate situation Asian elephants are in, it's also a very hopeful film, and you learn about one Thai woman among many other people who are working tirelessly to save them. Love and Bananas is available on iTunes, and you can also request to host a screening in your town by going to loveandbananas.com. I loved getting the chance to meet Ashley and her father, and I hope you enjoy.
From the Fox 11 studios in Los Angeles, California, it's the Olympic and Bundy podcast with host Kelly Taylor.
Are you like just very, because I feel like when you're so close to something and then you finally put it out to the world, it's sort of like, I believe in it. I think it's important. I think it's great. I had a great time doing it and all of that. But then it's like, when you see the reaction from other people, like, how has that process been for you?
Oh, it's been insane. Yeah. It's been absolutely overwhelming. Yeah. When it really started taking off, the big warning we got was the New York Times, you know, in getting ready for that press week, our distributor was like, you're going to get slaughtered, you know,
okay.
New York hasn't come out yet. Gotcha. And we were bracing ourselves just to get, you know, creamed. And they came back with like a beyond positive review. And that's when everything changed. Oh, yeah.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
So they kind of said, like, just to sort of forewarn you, just in case, they said,
yes,
heads up.
Heads up.
Bad.
Heads up. Like, you're coming, you know, I mean, I went to, you know, my dad's from Brooklyn. I went to NYU. But at the same time, they were like, you're coming to New York, people are tough. And I was like, I know, girl, like, I did Broadway, like, you never know how something's gonna land until it does, and it either does or it doesn't, you know, and you can hope, but you never know how it's gonna be received, and that's part of the adrenaline of doing projects, of doing films, is seeing how it's going to touch audiences, or if it does, and if it is swaying on either sides of controversy, you know, you're like, great.
Yeah.
As long as people don't leave and are like, what's for lunch?
Yeah.
You know, as long as they're still talking about it, I've done my job.
Right. Exactly.
I made art. No.
Yeah. Did you, you went to NYU, you said?
I did. Yeah. I went to NYU. I studied acting and directing there.
Oh, interesting. So was it film directing or like for the stage, or
it was mainly for the stage. NYU has a bunch of different programs, and I was in the theater program primarily as an actress, but I'd actually, so my mom is one of the founding members of the Groundlings in LA.
Oh, that's awesome.
As an awkward teenager, that was the first place I was put into to get over any fear and get totally comfortable with myself.
Yeah.
And a huge part, you know, both of my parents have started theaters and have always done their own work and material, because that's, you know, when you, I don't mean to sound like a Pollyanna when I say this, but when you love what you do, you keep creating.
For sure.
So they instilled in me in an early age just to create, and the Groundlings was huge with that. So in the Groundlings, I actually wrote and did a one-woman show, not based on my life, but about me, like a cold reading acting class, where I played seven different characters, and that I did it as my senior project, and I actually rented a theater and did it there for a while, and that placed me in a studio called Playwrights Horizons at NYU, which was for actors, but also you learned everything. So when you got there, you learned acting, directing, design, costumes, movement. So it really, you know, when you show up on set or on stage, there are a lot of other choices besides you. And it makes you aware of, like, that rug is there because, that light is there because it's this time of day. They're conveying this feeling. It trains you just to be a part of a bigger and bigger and bigger picture. So that was my process. That was kind of my experience at NYU, and you know, a lot of theater directing primarily. But that's exciting because, you know, when you're in a black box, it's the one medium where you can hold up a pencil and go, "This is an Eiffel Tower."
Yeah, totally.
And they're like, "No, it's not." You're like, "Yes, it is." And people go, "Yes, it is."
She's right.
This is the Eiffel Tower. So it was really exciting.
Was this the first film that you directed?
Yes. Yeah, Love and Bananas was the first film I directed, wrote, and produced. Yeah.
Did you have sort of like an itch for years to do this? Because I know that this process was multiple years in the making, but
yeah.
Even before you even stumbled across like going to Cambodia and Thailand, did you always want to make a documentary, or did it just sort of happen in the way that it did?
Totally. Like, I mean, truly both. I'd always wanted to direct. I'd always been fascinated by it. I'd always been interested in it. I always thought it would be a narrative, and way later in my life when I could, you know, support the needs of an entire cast and crew. You have to be their backbone. I never thought it would be a documentary, and truly going into this, I really didn't watch a lot of documentaries. What struck me was this story. When I heard the story of this world-renowned Asian elephant conservationist who's working on the front lines every day against literally death threats and all odds to save this species, I was just compelled to go. A very close family friend owns the Cambodia Wildlife Sanctuary, and he'd been working with this woman, Lek Chyler, to find these elephants. And I remember it clear as day. I got an email literally in December. You know, everybody's quiet, and they said, "We finally found these two elephants to rescue. Anybody that wants to come see them be released is more than welcome to come." And at that time, I had several films coming out in theaters, and I had access to production companies, and I came up with the project and made a board and put note cards and designs and color palettes and the whole thing and pitched it around. And before I knew it, we were on our way to Cambodia. Yeah.
Wow. So, okay. So your family friend kind of told you the story about Lek.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then, so when you initially went, you had in mind that you wanted to make some type of shorter documentary, right?
Absolutely.
And you'd already talked to a production house and kind of got that together. Just, this is interesting to me. Let's try and make something if there's a story.
Yes.
Okay. Got it. And then with another question I had just from watching this and then sort of meeting you, because when I watched the film, I think that your like wonder of seeing these animals, and then you just seem very empathetic. Like you just seem to have a lot of empathy that it's like infectious to people watching it.
Thank
or at
you.
Least to me, I was sort of like, I felt like I was feeling what you were feeling.
Awesome.
You know?
Awesome.
Have you always been, I know you're a vegetarian. We were just kind of all talking about that, grew up that way. Have you always been an animal lover per se? Like, did you have pets when you were growing up? Did you feel close with animals, like a dog or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was born and raised a vegetarian, and there were always rescue dogs growing up. Like always rescue dogs, rescue cats. I was the kid in school taking bees out with my fingers and putting them like in a flower petal. Or I remember one afternoon after school, I actually saved a pelican in the middle of Hollywood with my dad. Massive excitement for an 8-year-old.
In the middle of Hollywood, I love that.
Stranded pelican.
Nice.
So I'd always been... that had always been something I was very aware of and sensitive to. One of my youngest experiences around like wild animals was a sanctuary in Topanga that's since been relocated. But this one woman rescued animals from canned hunts. Lions and tigers and bears, and pretty much, and wolves. And I actually got, as an 8-year-old, I got bit by a lion.
No, really?
Yeah.
Where?
Right on my back. He'd been declawed, so he didn't have claws, and he was just a baby. He was like more a teen, you know, but still a teenage lion. It's not a feather. and I really thought it was the coolest thing that had ever possibly happened to me. And I had like the best Monday at school.
Yeah. That's almost one of those stories that you wouldn't believe. Like if a kid came to school and you were like, oh, I got bit by a lion this weekend, you'd be like, okay, well, she's full of it. You know what I mean? Like
that's 100%. My poor parents, though, because they were like, you're not wearing that bloody shirt to school. And I was like, yes, I am.
Yes, I am. Oh, my gosh.
Then I went to drama school. I've always been sensitive to it. But, you know, you go about your life and you do... You get, you know, as an actress, you get caught up with your job and doing your job and trying your best at everything. And when this opportunity came and hit me, when I got off the plane in Cambodia, the first thing I asked was, what's that smell? Because it smelled like smoke. And somebody leaned over to me and they said, that's the forest. It's on fire. It's burning. And that's because of the deforestation that's happening, that's ravaging Cambodia, which essentially it relates to elephants because at the time we filmed, 70% of the jungle had been slashed and burned. That's their home.
Right.
So there's no place for elephants to go anymore. That's wild. Elephants are also keystone species. So as they make their way through the jungle, they, you know, by eating and also by dropping elephant droppings. They repopulate the forest and they plant seeds for other animals to eat and also grow and live, and they repopulate the forest. So by cutting down their home, they don't have any place to go that's wild anymore, which is affecting the entire ecosystem. And, you know, I was in the middle of an interview with Lek Chiler, the conservationist, and literally in the middle of the interview, you hear buzzsaws rip and a tree crack and fall. And there were several big pivotal moments, and that was one of them where you go, this is what it looks like.
Wow.
This is what everybody's talking about. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. And, you know, with that very naive concept of a short film and moving quickly or trying to grasp whatever we could, it led me into this bigger world. But in really contemplating and thinking about the footage we got and trying to assemble something at that time, it just, with what I was allowed to experience, I couldn't just tweet or share or post it. I had to do whatever I had in my arsenal or whatever access I had to raise awareness about the issue.
Yeah.
And that was deciding to do a full-length documentary, that was deciding to go on an actual elephant rescue with Lek, to accompany her on a full elephant rescue and tell the story that way.
Yeah, it's almost like when you know, the more you know about something, it's like, okay, well, now I got to do this.
Right?
It's like, no question, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, it's also something that I try to get across in the film is it's so easy to be paralyzed when you get, you know, the call to action to do something. We all have a moral compass and you can choose to do something or not. But with where we're at right now, especially with elephants and in these big, big endangered species, doing one thing matters.
Right.
And you don't have to do everything. I've met people that have done bake sale. Like, you know, a bunch of kids came to see the movie and they did a bake sale for elephants. Aww. And donated to Lek. That's huge.
Right.
Somebody rode, did a cycling, like, you know, I went to drama school, so what's the word? They like cycled a marathon.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Like they did a marathon, but
they
on
did
a bike.
Marathon on a bike. Right, cool.
I know.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I don't even know what that would be called. Bike
right?
race.
They did a bike race and donated proceeds to elephants. Somebody else does tattoos and they give a portion of like the money they make for elephants. That's doing a lot.
Yeah. Kind of like tending to the garden that you can reach.
Yeah.
Right?
But that's what it is. Even when you look beyond that and you say, you know, recently we had a conversation on conservation and it's like, well, what does conservation look like in 2018? And how are you relating to the next generation and kids? You know, it feels so far away and it feels distant and difficult. And I think it's important to celebrate these creatures instead of just flood people with images or guilt trip them or proselytize we're all smart enough. We don't need to be talked to that way anymore. Right. And people want to do good. They just sometimes don't know the way. And when people know better, they genuinely do better. They're ready to get that knowledge.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it's been a very interesting time to see how the film has been landing and how it's been landing with kids especially and what's been coming out of it.
Yeah, so when you guys were here before, we were sort of talking about, just because I told you I'd watched An Apology to Elephants, so
yes.
I sort of, after having watched that, it was sort of like you were talking about, the more you know, you're more just aware of it.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of makes you second guess doing things that maybe involve a wild animal that has been taken into the circus, or
right.
makes you sort of second guess doing other activities, knowing more. And I feel like in learning more about elephants, it's like, it just makes you view the animal. This film in particular really, I don't know another way to say it other than it just really humanizes the elephants. Have people
you.
Said that?
Yes.
Because
yes.
even the way that Leck, I feel like Leck calls them people.
Thank you.
Right?
That's my, thank you for, you're the only one that's caught that.
Really?
Yes.
Because she does it a lot and I'm like, oh, it just, because she obviously
favorite.
Is very...
It's my invested. Favorite, like, quote-unquote line in the film when she says, these people talk to these people.
Yeah.
And that is Leck. She proves that when you treat these elephants with dignity and with respect, they're somehow able to forgive whatever abuse or situation
yeah.
they've gone through, and they're able to trust her and be elephants again.
Yeah, and yeah. she just has... It's... like just profound understanding of what an elephant is thinking
yeah.
and about to do.
Yep.
And yeah. like even the part where like this, one of the moments that I felt like, wow, this is a little kid, was when the baby elephant's eyes were huge.
Right.
So you guys go to rescue. I want to get into Noi Na and that rescue and that whole situation, but you go to a trekking camp where these elephants are basically, they're ridden for tourists, right?
Yeah, a trekking camp is elephant riding, yes.
Okay, so you go there and you see this baby elephant and its eyes are giant. And
yeah.
I feel like to someone who's unaware, you would just think like, oh, that's just how it looks.
Right.
But Leck is like, no, you can see it in their eyes when they're sad. And this particular elephant's eyes are huge because it's like, what is going on? Like, it's frightened.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. The mother knows how to control what she's feeling, but the baby elephant doesn't know what's happening. She
yeah.
just knows something's wrong.
Yeah.
And
I know that probably it's a difficult decision to decide how much, you know, graphic content you want to put in there versus, you know, making it to where it you walk away and you feel hopeful about these animals.
Right.
But another moment that I really felt... like really brought me closer to these elephants was the, when you're talking about how elephants are, their spirit is broken so that they can be used for being ridden with
right.
the crush box.
Right.
It almost reminds me of like if you were a POW.
Yeah.
A prisoner, to where you're,
yep.
you're just continuously being broken down and broken down and broken down. I feel like that's what's happening with the animals in that situation, in a crush box.
That's
right?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. That's exactly what it is. So, you know, and so with this is the only bit of graphic footage we
yeah.
do show in the film, and it's this is Lex's life work, and the footage that we show is a result of her undercover footage and her going on the front lines to capture this, and also a lot of it's not undercover. They're aware that she's filming. Asian elephants are wild animals. There's no such thing as a domestic Asian elephant. You can't domesticate the breed. So they're going to be a wild animal. And in order to take an Asian elephant and make them suitable for entertainment, they have to be put through something called the crush box or some form of that abuse where a baby elephant is taken away from its mother and it's tied up and beat straight for a week until the bond between the baby and the mother is replaced by the fear of man and the fear of whatever tool man is using at the time, a bull hook, a piece of bamboo with a nail in it, et cetera, et cetera. After that point, they're taught to do rides or stand on their hands or stand on balls or shoot hoops or...
or paint a picture.
Paint a picture, exactly, yeah. And, yeah.
Did you, the first time that you went, is that when you first, like, Did you see that in person?
I did not see it in person.
Or did Lex just kind of say, this is what happened?
I saw the footage. And then... Yes, I saw the footage. And I saw, you know, I saw very recent footage of it too. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw when Lex was in town last, she showed me footage of it happening 3 months ago. So, you know, and yeah.
Do you feel that there's maybe a difference in how we view the treatment of animals based on geographic locations on the planet, like in Western culture versus like maybe in Southeast Asia? Like, do you think that there's a difference in how we view the treatment of animals?
100%, but I say that with extreme care and sensitivity, mm-hmm. because this yeah. is their tradition and this is their culture. And when we were filming, it was an incredibly fine line to be, you know, there's a lot of red flags going into it. First of all, I'm an actress. This was not a vanity project. Second of all, I'm a white girl and we're going into Thailand,
right.
And Cambodia. We didn't have an agenda. We were filming what we saw. And what Lek has done is, you know, Lek Sanctuary in Chiang Mai is called Elephant Nature Park. It's the number one tourist destination in northern Thailand. Tourists are getting savvy. They want to be with elephants as elephants. They feel odd riding elephants. They're uncomfortable. Sometimes they just don't know. So yeah. what Lek is doing, and this is what we feature in the film, is she's actually turning trekking camps, these riding camps, into humane sanctuaries. And because of that, they're actually able to make more money. The camp is able to make more money as a humane sanctuary, and the elephants are able to live out their lives without chains and as elephants.
Yeah.
You essentially, what Lek does is she has people, quote unquote, work for the elephant, which people love doing. Mm-hmm. You know, you take baths with them, you cut sugar cane for them, you go on jungle walks with them, and people are really responding to that.
Yeah, it's like a more natural experience with them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And it's, you know, with Asian elephants, with what you said earlier, you know, with abuse of these creatures, when they're abused, they'll recover, but never 100%, mm-hmm. you know. So with every bit of abuse that happens, they'll be abused and then still not recover even up to that point. And they'll drift further and further and further away from where they were as a healthy newborn elephant until they snap and break.
Yeah.
Because, or have, you know,
yeah.
rampage or go out of control, because you are dealing with wild animals.
Animal.
Yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And Lek is just bad to the bone. I mean, she's like...
she is a rock star. She is a rock star of conservation.
I mean,
yes.
Not only is she just so obviously close with this animal to where she can understand them, but
yeah.
she becomes estranged from her family for it.
Yes.
Didn't she grow up on doing the opposite in some type of trekking
That's
camp,
exactly right.
And then sort of, instead of continuing that path, decided... you know, I'm going to do this a different way.
Yes.
I'm going to start a sanctuary and let
yep.
them run free. And so as a result, the culture necessarily wasn't caught up with her. And her
right.
family is, she was like declared an enemy of the state for a while.
She was
right?
declared an enemy of the state, and her family separated themselves from her. They disowned her. Yes.
Yeah, which is very sad. You know, when you...
Oh, it's horrible. Yeah, it's...
So... In your film, I don't want to necessarily give it away because I really want people to watch this. When people come on the podcast, I don't always worry about spoiler alerts
right.
because I just feel like, you know, whatever, watch it. But
yeah.
I feel like this is one of those films that I really, really would really love everyone listening to this to watch. But one of the owners that is in the movie,
yes,
he had multiple generations of this.
There you go.
So like you were mentioning, it's like, it's not the fault of one particular you know, person.
No.
It's just like, it's a systematic thing that
it's tradition.
Exists.
Yes.
Yeah. Like
yes.
his dad had a trekking camp. His grandpa had had a trekking camp probably.
Exactly. He grew up watching people ride on elephants. Yes.
Yeah. It's just kind of, you know, it's normal. That's what you see.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So do you feel like the work that Lek is doing, do you feel like from what you've noticed, the tide is sort of turning? I mean,
yes.
I know you said that you saw a video recently, but...
you know, a little bit of a spoiler alert, but since filming, actually, 19 camps have turned from trekking camps into humane sanctuaries.
Wow.
And Lek has actually taken the film and shown it in Thailand. She rented out a theater and did a quote-unquote community screening in Thailand and brought other trekking camps to come, trekking camps that have turned, and also, interestingly, the drivers that drive these elephants places. Lek sent me a photo. A lot of times, I was even unaware of this, when the truck drivers drive the elephants, it's just a day for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not really aware of the cargo back there. She invited all of the drivers that go through these missions with her, and they had no idea kind of what Lek was doing. And Lek took photos of this driver on a break coming back and being with this elephant they just rescued last week. And Lek said to me, she's like, I've never seen this before. So, yes, I very much think it's turning. And Lek is able to take, you know, footage of her mahouts and her sanctuary and show that to other of Lek's satellite sanctuaries and other trekking camps that have turned to be like, look at this relationship that you can have with your elephants. And people are incredibly surprised because when an elephant is chained and when they're in a situation, when they're under duress and when they're exhibiting that stereotypic behavior where they're doing that bobbing back and forth.
Yeah.
Yes, if you do approach them, it's you're going to get a reaction, you know? And
right.
I'm only saying what Lek took us through it because we, you know, in the film we feature these elephants chained up, rocking, bobbing back and forth. That's not a dog wagging its tail. That's a form of zoocotic behavior. To then literally 20 minutes later when Lek has taken the chains off, is allowing the elephants to walk and eat freely and nibble and munch and rub up against trees. And they're not charging us. They're not attacking us.
Right.
They're fine. They're content. And Lek shows people that. And we called it a miracle factor because that was actually, I hesitated saying that, you know, we were going to go on a rescue. I still didn't know if the film was going to be a short or a feature length. Only content can dictate that because I'd never drag an audience through something if it wasn't something to watch. But when this quote unquote miracle factor happened, which we were completely unaware was in the cards, mm-hmm. that was the moment in the scene where our filming definitely went into feature length content. Yeah.
Gotcha. So Lek is trying to sometimes convert these trekking camps to sanctuaries. Sometimes she's going and getting rescue. She's going and rescuing elephants and bringing them to her.
Yes.
Right? So it was interesting to learn about how difficult it is to even rescue an elephant. Because
right. In
your mind, you sort of think, oh, great, we'll go pick it up. We'll bring it back. Like, it'll be all sunshine. Yeah. It's not.
Pick it up.
Like, even you waiting back here, it's like it could fall through. I mean, you have to travel across the world, and
yeah.
then it could fall through. Like, last minute, they could sell it to a circus or something.
100%.
Right?
We had, in the 2.5 years that we were waiting for an elephant rescue to happen, we had 2 false starts.
Oh,
and
so meaning you were like ready to go.
We were totally, I got a message from Lek saying we found an elephant. I started, you know, I called Change for Balance, the production company I'd partnered with for day one. I was like, guys, what's your week?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we think we have something on Thursday. I was like, you got to cancel. Cancel that lunch.
We're going to Thailand.
We're going to Thailand. And then by that next morning at 8, that elephant had been sold to a circus, or that elephant had been... there was another instance which happened where I'm trying to remember what it was. I believe they just jacked up the price.
Gotcha.
They literally jacked up the price to where it was impossible to buy and liberate that elephant from its situation.
So each of these times, Lek's sanctuary is funding this to buy an elephant from a trekking company to rescue it?
Well, it's really tough because there is an active list of 200 elephants that mm-hmm. that need rescue. And what Lek does is she actually finds the oldest and sickest elephants, because she says even if they die in the truck or on her sanctuary when they step foot on a sanctuary, at least they'll have died in dignity.
Yeah.
And so a lot of what happens is they will rescue them as soon as they secure the funding. So that's that can be okay. spotty at times.
Yeah.
What's been really exciting about Love and Bananas, a huge part of launching the film has been launching an impact campaign along with the film. So we actually partnered with The Greater Good for the theatrical release. The Greater Good came on board. They started the Love and Bananas Fund. And the goal was to raise $40,000 for an Asian elephant named Sivalai in Laos and for $14,000 of medical equipment like desperately needed. In 9 days, we raised $80,000.
Wow.
With 100% of those proceeds going to LEC. Oh. And we're getting ready. We're starting our digital release right now. The Greater Good has, I mean, come back on, but also it's like we're joined at the hip now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, wait a sec. You know, so they're actually, it was incredibly significant because they came back to us and they said, hey, we know about Lex's list of 200. We want to go down that list. Oh. Let's save elephants.
So because the film's going to be on iTunes, right?
Yeah, actually, it's on iTunes. It just became available on iTunes right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. First, another thing that I didn't know this. I'm sure plenty of people don't know this is, so there's many different species of elephants, but for the most part, you would categorize them as African and Asian elephants.
That's exactly correct. Yes.
And you always hear about African elephants being killed for their ivory.
Yes.
Asian elephants are kind of facing other problems as far as, like, there's landmines on the ground.
Yeah.
That have been left from, like, past wars.
Past wars.
And they're... Many of them are taken in. There's like a third of them in captivity.
That's right.
All of the elephants that exist in Southeast Asia, there's a third of them in captivity, which is a ton of elephants.
It's a ton of elephants.
Like way more than I thought.
Right, yeah.
So Noi Na is one elephant, which is 70?
Yes. Noi Na at the time was 70 years old when
I didn't even know
her.
An elephant could live that long.
Right? They actually live human years.
Wow.
Lek has an elephant that's 102 on the sanctuary.
What?
I know.
Really?
Old gray lady.
Is that close to a record?
I actually think it is close to a record. I think it is close to a record. And I was unaware of that, too, is that they're so similar to us in so many different ways. And one of the huge ones is age.
Yeah.
In addition to empathy and their family structures, and they mourn their loved ones and they can recognize themselves. They're self-aware. They can recognize their reflection in the mirror, you know, things like that. But age is a major one. And actually in captivity, their age is about cut in half in captivity. So they'll be able to make it to around 30, 40 years old in captivity.
Do you think that's due to stress and, you know, just your spirit being
broken?
Sad? Yeah.
I do think it's due to stress. And also, this is not a statement on all zoos. That would be too broad a statement and incorrect. But I know with a lot of elephants in captivity, actually, the biggest problem for them is they get arthritis and abscesses in their feet. So here's the thing. When you're 8,000 pounds, the elephants sleep 4 hours a night. They're meant to travel miles and miles a day and eat and forage for food and be stimulated throughout the entire day. When they're put in captivity, they stand 8,000 pounds in the exact same kind of plot of land. So they're just packing that soil. So unless that soil in a zoo or a circus is rototilled and constantly softened up, they're pretty much standing on concrete. Mm-hmm. So they will get abscesses in the bottom of their feet. And you have these majestic giants literally dying from being overweight, from abscesses, or from osteoporosis. Mm. That's it. And David Castleman, who's actually an executive producer on Love and Bananas, has been an LA-based trial attorney, and he's been working to free Billy in Los Angeles for pro bono for years.
Oh, we've done stories about Billy.
Exactly. Yeah, David Castleman has been on the front lines fighting the fight to get Billy out of the zoo, and the court went all the way up to the Supreme Court The case went all the way up to the Supreme Court. It was thrown out literally on a technicality, but it has been proven that Billy has these ailments, and it's time for him to go to sanctuary.
Yeah. So the case was thrown out. I was going to say, what was the outcome on that? Because I know we've reported on it a
lot. Yeah. They won, and it was It went to the Supreme Court in Sacramento. And it was thrown out on a technicality. Mm. So they're back down here, and they need... I think the last word I heard was that they need a third expert, you know, an expert unattached
to either side
to come in and weigh in on what's going on. But we actually, Love and Bananas has some big plans to help Billy be free. So we will attack this this fall. Yes. Coming soon.
To be continued. The sequel. Love and Bananas, the sequel. Billy. Yeah, so speaking of standing still.
Right.
I was the whole production. How many people did you have with you on your production team when you filmed this?
Well, it was myself and three guys.
Three guys. Okay, because
and that is Change for Balance Production, who were on board from the beginning, that first trip, and I tell you, with what you see on camera, it's just as much drama on the other side of the camera.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Those guys got kicked by elephants. They got shoved by elephants. They ran from elephants. It was, on the back of trucks in rain.
Oh, yeah. There's
everybody got sick. The whole shebang.
There's a funny part in Love and Bananas where you're back at Lex Sanctuary, and I don't remember if it was Noi Na, the rescued elephant, or another rescued elephant, and the cameraman, basically this elephant is riled up, and it starts charging at him, and he runs into a side room, and like pretty soon later, he's like, whew, and he comes out, and he's like, all right, I'm good. And it just made me think, like, were there a lot of other close calls like that to where, like, did anyone get, like, you know, accidentally injured, or, you know what I mean? Because, I mean, you're so close around these animals that are giant.
No one got injured. Absolutely no one got injured. But yes, you know, especially with the babies, that was when you're out on the sanctuary, you're on there are house rules.
Yeah.
You're on their land and their time. You can't have an agenda. So there are a lot of baby, you know, and baby elephants, like a rolling ball of thunder.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there, you know, when a baby would come with its herd or whatever, you would just hear from across, like, watch out, and everybody would just like lift up cameras and run. And
had any of the people, the camera guys that went with you, had they been to Thailand or been around wild animals? Was this a new experience for them?
They're a documentary production company, as well as doing a bunch of commercial work. My producing partner of the project, John McCarthy, and his partner in the company, Roddy Tebatabai, they've done documentaries or documentary work all throughout the world. So they've been in the Congo, they've been in Russia, they've been in South Africa, they've been in those elements where you have a moving target to shoot, you know, moving window, and you have to, you know, we did it in 14 days. It was a very short shoot, and we traveled light, first of all, because it was an act of rescue. We had to be mindful of Lex's team. These elephants are incredibly fragile and sensitive. We need to be respectful of their space, their confused and stressed and abused, and they don't know where they're going. And it was just, we also were filming something that people don't necessarily want to be filmed all the time. So we traveled very, very lightly and kept the cameras rolling nonstop. So for Change for Balance to get that footage and keep that aesthetic quality was just a huge tribute to them. We shot both on the Canon 5Ds for all of our interview content, just because there were a lot of interviews, and then we also filmed 5D on the Red, to really make it beautiful and sweeping, and do those close-ups on the elephants so you could see their freckles and their elbows and the fuzzies, the little gray curls,
and they get like wrinkles as they get older, and one was crying. Do elephants cry just from emotion? I mean, was that like tears from emotion, or was it just like, oh, my eyes are
got stuff in my eyes? Lek told me it was from emotion. I asked, because I was like, that can't be possible. And I asked Lek, is she crying? And she said,
there's nothing more sad than an elephant crying.
It's devastating. It's devastating.
And yeah, I mean, even
and she
just
has other rescue footage where you'll see these elephants with tears. Yeah. Yeah, or with yeah, no, it happens.
When you go to rescue Noi Na, and first of all, she like doesn't want to get on the truck for good reason because
right.
she's first of all, she's 70 and has lived her whole life with a chain on. I mean,
yeah.
I just can't imagine like your how you would just view your life. I mean, I know it's an animal and I don't know how self-aware elephants are just as far as their existence and you know what's beyond, but she's lived her whole life in chains. She's 70. She's blind.
Yes.
Right? So every time she's been on a truck, it's not been good. Right?
That's exactly it. She smells the truck and she doesn't. The last time she was on the truck, it was on the way to another circus or another logging facility. Elephants are also used as, you know, they can't get tractors into deepest parts of jungle, so they use elephants to pull logs. So it was to a circus, it was to another trekking camp, it was to a logging facility. She smells the truck and she thinks she's just going to more another place of servitude.
Yeah, so rescuing these elephants, it can be like kind of dangerous and tough because
absolutely
they don't know that they're going to hopefully freedom. They just are sort of like, oh gosh, another truck, another situation like that. And so when she's finally on there, that's like sort of when I realized that this rescue is like, this is hard. I mean,
yeah, yes, and that's to go back to what Lek is. Lek means tiny in Thai. That's her nickname. And she's under 5 feet. So the fact that she's doing this, you know, not on the regular, but she has to jump as soon as one is available for rescue. I mean, this is her life. This is what she does.
Yeah.
And also with kind of the deciding moment of going on the first shoot, what was just pivotal for me was I saw the footage. She always has an iPad tucked under her arm, and she had filmed the last rescue that, you know, of the elephants, that the first elephants that I'd gotten a chance to meet. And it was the most terrifying, electric, yet completely hopeful and victorious footage I'd ever seen. And that's how she operates. There's just this sense of she's just this indomitable spirit. And when I saw that, I was like, well, I've never seen anything like that before. That's the film. That's the story that needs to be told.
Yeah.
But when we got on the truck, it did dawn upon us, like, oh boy, we're going to be here for 23 hours.
Also, I had the thought. I mean, a lot of things, I felt very, like, intense and bad and just sort of worried for Noi Na, this elephant that's being rescued that has to stand just straight up for 23 hours because, you know, you got to transport it.
Right.
And it can't, like, really sit down, you know. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's got to get from point A to point B. But also I'm thinking of all of you guys in the back of this truck for, I mean, I complain driving 8 hours and I'm, you know, like spread out in a nice comfortable Avalon, you know, and I'm just thinking of you guys, it's hot. It's like what, 98 degrees. And then you're going for 23 hours, just, I mean, nonstop. It's like, I feel like that was a really intense journey. And it just is really remarkable how committed everyone is in doing it.
Well, the first thing Lek did when she walked us through the truck was she pointed to a bed and she's like, here's where we'll be sleeping. And that's Lek. She's not going to leave that elephant alone. Yeah. That elephant's going to be scared and confused and she is not going to leave its side. But I think I was off. There were follow vans. I think I was in a follow van for, 4 hours, but I really, I'd been up for like 3 days getting ready to go.
Yeah.
Just on adrenaline because I couldn't believe this was actually. First of all, you know, you're like, I'm flying to Chiang Mai. I hope the rescue will still be happening by the time I get there.
Right. I have a production company in tow. I got
this is know. We fundraised on Indiegogo. Yeah. We're blowing it all right now. We're all chips on the table.
Yeah.
And when we got there, everything was in full swing. We literally landed and then bam, moved our bags. We were heading down to the to Kanchanaburi where she was. Noi Na was on the Burmese Thai border, and then we were on the rescue back. So I did fall asleep for a long period of time on the truck. It was incredibly
It's a journey.
It was a journey. Yeah.
And there's so many. It was just interesting how to see how many things are really working against you when you're doing something like that.
Yes.
That it's like, and luck is just doing this all, like, you know, just continuously doing this, like trying to rescue animals, because it's a difficult thing. You know, it's not
huge.
As easy as you would think, I guess, in my mind, naively, I thought, oh, you know.
No, and what Lek does is there's always a plan B, C, and D. Mm. I mean, normally what happens if the elephant won't go on the truck, she will start to walk the elephant. Mm. And she has a path routed, and that will take days.
Yeah, she's there. She's in the herd.
Yes, she is.
Right?
She is. And she's mom.
Yeah.
She's mom to these elephants. Yeah.
She just seems like so in tune with them. That really comes across, I feel like, in the movie.
The way she speaks is, well, the fact that she calls them people, thank you for saying that. And there's a poetry with the way she speaks also.
Yeah. She calls them like the colors of the planet,
that's right.
I think. And
wow.
Yeah, you could just tell she's very like,
thank you.
She's a champ. Lek
thank
is
you.
The woman.
I mean,
for sure.
Yes, she truly is. We had a friend of mine had come to the screening and had met her, and she said to me, she's like, Lek's got huge energy. And I was like, oh, what do you mean? You know, because I had spent time with her, and I watch her all day long, and you know, editing and stuff like that. And she's like, she's just got this like dynamic energy. And it dawned upon me, I was like, well, she does hang out with elephants all day, so
that's got to do something, right?
You're so like, yeah, she does have huge energy.
It enhances your personality for sure.
There's a huge force inside of her, but yes.
Do you have a favorite scene in this movie? I mean, I'm sure probably because you're so close to it, it might be hard to pick one. But did you have a particular favorite moment, I guess, in this experience?
Oh, I mean, my favorite moment was actually the moment that we use on the poster, where Lek, I did not know this was going to happen. Lek was introducing me to the herd because she was going to introduce the herd to Noina, the new elephant, and let them know that she still loves them, but there's a new family member. So Lek and I go out into the middle of the field, and she's brought a bunch of peanuts as an offering, and Fa Mei, this elephant that's like her daughter, comes up to greet her. And Fa Mei's herd comes with her. And I'm sitting, you know, Indian style on the floor, on the grass with Lek. And before I know it, there are eight huge, full-size elephants completely surrounding me. And I'm just, every little tap of their elbow or their knee, I just am just getting full whiplash.
Yeah.
And Lek kind of let me exhale, you know, because it was obviously a lot at first. And she said, they trust you. You're my friend, so you're a member of the herd.
Aww.
And I just remember just exhaling and just flowing with them, I suppose, for lack of a better word, and being able to look up and see these trunks and just to feel this massive presence and see these ears just flapping. It was huge, and I'm very, very, very grateful for being allowed to sit in that spot and for that they trusted me enough to let me in there. That was a huge honor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was probably one of my favorites, too. It's just a beautiful scene, because, I mean, how often are you going to – is that going to happen?
Never.
I mean, you both are tiny people. Like, it's not like either of you are, like, big for humans, you know?
No. Yeah. Yeah. I was yelling to change, you know, to the change rebalance of the guys filming, and I was like, guys, you've got to come under here. You've got to see. And I had no idea really the size and scope of what was happening around me. And I'm like, guys, you've got to get under here. Like, you got to see this. And I just hear, we're good.
Yeah. I'm saying back here. We're good.
No, they were amazing. They were amazing. They were amazing. But
yeah. Elephants seem to be, very much, in need of community, like humans do.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes, they form these matriarchal societies, and they teach mothering and survival throughout the herd. So when they say an elephant never forgets, it's because when they migrate, just miles and miles and miles, they need to remember where there's a city, where it's safe to walk, what's safe to eat, where's water, what's not safe, where are predators. you know, in South. So the big difference between Asia and Africa is in Asia, with Asian elephants, it's the human elephant conflict. So that where elephants would normally have the expanse to just migrate, they can't anymore because there's a city or because there's a farm. Mm-hmm. And for instance, for a farmer, that's his livelihood is his farm. For an elephant, that's like a light snack.
Yeah. Oh,
you definitely. Know. Yeah. So it's this constant conflict of where do you go that's wild anymore.
Yeah. I mean, they don't really but, have a lot of places to go.
Yeah. And that actually, I learned something incredible. Lek had said that, you know, with these herds, because you have babies and moms and then nannies and super nannies and great, you know, the whole family, generations of elephants are in a herd. And she said, well, when a young elephant is getting ready to give birth, you don't watch the mother, watch the midwife. And I was like, whoa.
Oh,
wait.
They have a midwife.
They got a midwife?
Wow.
I was like, what? And she said 100%, because that elephant, you know, doesn't know really what's going to happen, but the midwife will know when that elephant's getting ready to give birth. They'll prepare a bed, and actually when the mother's water breaks, so to speak, the midwife will be the one to come and use grass or dirt or any coverings to cover up the water, whatever fluid, so that no predators will be able to find her and the newborn elephant. And I was like, Lek, you've blown my mind again, as have these elephants. I cannot believe this.
They're the coolest animal. I mean, I feel like the more you learn about them, it's like just amazing.
Yeah. When you're talking about family structure, like just go, they have midwives. They've got this on lock.
They've got it figured out, for sure.
Out,
yes. Yeah, I mean, you're right, and the memory thing. I think we were talking about this last time you were here, that in the Alzheimer's community, a lot of people get elephant tattoos.
Yes.
As sort of elephants don't forget, because they have really great memory of, they know everyone in their herd. Like, I don't know if a deer herd would know everyone in the deer herd. I don't know. But elephants are very aware of everyone in their community.
Absolutely.
And actually, there's one story that I think this was maybe in like the 90s of these two elephants, Jenny and Shirley, that met. They were reunited.
Yes.
And the person who ran the rescue or the sanctuary wasn't aware at the time that they had been in the circus before. So 20 years later, they had this weird, because when elephants meet for the first time, they're kind of sizing each other up maybe. But these elephants were like, hey, Jenny, it's me, Shirley. Like, they had obviously were signaling that they'd known each other.
Yes.
And then later she found out, they were briefly in the same circus like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So they'd recognize each other, which is nuts.
It's beautiful. Cute. It is absolutely, I remember seeing that video and it just like, even to hear the story, I get chills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I know you mentioned it in the film as just as far as how when an elephant loses someone they love, they'll show signs of, you know, how we would view mourning.
Absolutely.
And sometimes they'll, you know, kind of pick up the remains or try to bury them in some way. I mean, it's really, really beautiful.
Yeah, no, they will try to bury. They will definitely grieve if, Lek has told me stories, if you know, an elephant has a best friend that is lost, that one elephant will go into a severe period of mourning. And, actually, you know, with trekking sometimes, which I learned from Lek, with these elephants that are trekking and carrying tourists, the stress will actually get to be so much at some points that they will have a heart attack. They're that sensitive creatures and that.
Yeah.
That much empathetic, that much like us, you know, Lek has seen it, where these elephants will be walking literally with tourists on their back. These elephants will drop to their knees and people will be like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And it's that elephant's, I mean, dead, you know.
Yeah.
It will have a heart attack on the spot.
Totally.
Yeah. It breaks your heart, you know what I mean, with these creatures that have the familial structure and are are so adept to survival and their environment and their communications, and they can communicate. They can communicate through their feet, actually, through rumbles that go miles and miles and miles. They'll pick up on sensory waves from each other. And when you isolate them and take all of that stimulation away from them and take their friends and their family away from them and confine them to do the same thing every day, you can really see how it affects them and how it really does break them, break
that
their spirit.
That 100% comes through in the movie, I feel like. You can really, that's like one of the main takeaways I had is just like, it really, the whole time I'm just picturing these animals as if they were people.
100%.
And I'm thinking
That's exactly what we were doing, and that's exactly what we wanted to show. That's why we shot it in the ways we did, so that you can really get up close and really see these elephants as it's every part of these elephants. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. I think sometimes it's easy for humans to separate themselves from other living things that don't express themselves the same way that we do.
Of course.
You know, like if it's sort of like, oh, well, they don't speak my language, so how do I know what they're going through? It's sort of, you know, and I feel like that's happened with a lot of animals, including elephants, you know. It's like, if I don't know that much about them, I'm not going to notice that they're doing the sway thing and that's not good.
Exactly. That's
just, you know, so anyways, I almost feel like that's happened a lot with animals, and it's I don't know. It's so the film is obviously doing a great thing in educating and showing how when animals are happy and in their natural habitat, how these elephants normally behave.
Thank you. Yeah, it was so important to make a film that, you know, even though we have talked about the graphic parts of the film, I really wanted to take audiences on a journey and on an elephant rescue and have the audience trust us with it, that we're not going to blitz and bombard you with heavy graphic content. There's that small bit of graphic content in the beginning, and then we're off on the rescue. There are no sit-down interviews because we don't want to be preaching to anybody, or, you know, we just want, my role in the film, at least on camera, was to be in Lek shadow, and I wanted the audience to put themselves right where I was, to see and feel exactly as I was doing. And so many kids have come to see the film in theaters and in community screenings, and actually this 8-year-old boy came up to me and he said, and it still gets me to this day, he said, "This isn't a film about elephants. It's a film about all animals."
Oh, it is. Like, well, that's very insightful for an 8-year-old.
I could not believe it. I was like,
wow, he's right.
Is this what iPads teach you guys?
It sure is.
I was like, you are really smart, and I will keep that with me my entire life.
Bless you, my child.
Yes, right. Yes, yeah.
So I know that we were sort of talking about there's various ways that you can sort of help any endangered animal, specifically the Asian elephant. But one really insightful thing I think is what you shouldn't do.
Great.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is in terms of, let's say you're visiting Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
You maybe would go visit a sanctuary like Lek and not choose to ride an elephant.
Right. Exactly. That's 100% it. You know, as we say in the film, don't ride elephants, don't buy elephant paintings, you know, don't support. If you see a sanctuary where elephants are being ridden, that's not a quote-unquote sanctuary. You know what I mean? Those are elephants being used for entertainment and elephants being used as a service. That's not existing with elephants as elephants. Yes, 100%. Yeah. A sanctuary is not the wild. But at least at Lek Sanctuary, these elephants have had such severe mental and physical damage. It's like a hospice for them. They need this constant care, so they're at a sanctuary. But you're not using them for a service. You are existing with them. A big part of what we wanted to do with this film was the impact campaign and... You know, we have a couple action items on our website, loveandbananas.com, and they're just quick action items that people can do if they want to, as an icebreaker, to be like, I want to get involved, what can I do? You know, the key to saving the species is education, really. Mm-hmm. And when you know better, you do better. So we have shareable resources that you can grab and like tweet and share and post about the film and about the issue. Also, exactly what you were just saying, we have a humane travel pledge. So that it says that when you travel, you won't support elephants being used for entertainment, and you also won't support other exotic animals being used mm-hmm. for entertainment, because these creatures are taken out of their homes, their indigenous environments, and away from their families to be used. So those are tiger kingdoms. Those are sloths. Yeah. You know what I mean? Those are even... even in, you know, in Thailand, they'll have those fish baths where you put your feet in the bath and these.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I could not do that.
Yeah. yeah. You know, and it's just being like, oh, wow. You know, a lot of people come and they get their selfie with these mm-hmm. creatures. And then it's literally, you can see it.
My favorite is, in sarcastic, my favorite yeah. is when the tiger is like drugged.
Yeah. Yeah.
To where you can take a picture with the yep. tiger. Oh, that can, I mean, you just see that and you're like, that is just, that cannot be good.
But you know, and you don't know because it's not, it's hasn't been reshaped, you know.
And so it's not the fault of the people, again, it's not the fault of the people doing it, or, you know, if you're there and you don't know any better, I get it. But yeah. what you're saying, education.
But it's like, oh, wait, let me stop and be like, hold on, this is an exotic animal. Because, you know, a photo is taken and then it's just all about what you've got on your phone. You're mm-hmm. not aware that, or some people aren't aware that they're in the presence of definitely an endangered species, definitely a just a huge, majestic creature, you know what I mean? That is no business being anywhere near you. So it's to be like, oh, wait, I'm in the presence of this entity. Let me mm-hmm. take that in. Let me not just take what I can get from him or her and be on my way.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing we're doing on Love and Bananas is the partnership with the Greater Good and the Love and Bananas Fund. We're constantly funding more elephant rescues. And then the last thing is we actually offer library and community and educational screenings, and we've had just a tremendous amount of interest on that, of libraries
and cool.
people bringing the film to their universities to their high schools and junior high to share this film with kids there.
So you can essentially like go through your website and request it somewhere.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. And so far we've had around 250 requests for community screenings.
Wow. Alone.
It's been insane. It's been people.
Gosh.
Yeah. It's been like knock on wood. It's been.
Yeah.
It's been great. Yeah.
That's so exciting.
It's very exciting. It's,
right?
I can't believe it. Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm so happy for you. And for just
Thank you.
Everyone involved. That's awesome.
Thank
and for
you.
Noina.
I'm, yeah, I, so the craziest thing, I was at, currently we're at the Arena Cine Lounge. We're actually, so the film started out in 20 theaters. We're actually now in 90 theaters. And because
oh, wow.
of this, you know, for an independent documentary, that's a lot. But because of the momentum, our distributor is actually bringing it back into theaters in LA and New York to qualify it for an Academy Award in order to use that platform to just spotlight Lek and spotlight the Asian elephant and create a mega amount of visibility around the issue. And I was at the Arena Cine Lounge where the film is being shown in Hollywood over the weekend, and this whole family came to one of the matinee shows, and they're like, wait, we just were at Elephant Nature Park last week.
Oh, at Lek's place.
At Lek's place. And they pulled out their phone and they showed me, they're like, this is Noi Na. And I was like,
oh, she's still.
What? And it was her doing, I've heard from Lek, her favorite activity is taking an afternoon soak in the river.
Same
plus,
girl.
Plus, same.
Oh,
and there she was
there.
Sitting in the river, and this whole family was just like with their arms around each other. Watch it. It was one of the most.
Wow. I bet they heard about your film and they were like, we got to see this. Right? I mean, if they just saw it.
I may. Yes.
That's so
I don't know how, who connected who or what doc got. But they literally, and I mean, I've been texting with the mom. Aww. She sent me all these photos. I put them up on Instagram. I was blown away. So it also has been forming this insane community of elephant lovers, also people that want to know more about elephants, and also people that have volunteered with LEC and who've gone like, this is, you know, because you can volunteer there and it's a life-changing experience and this is their film. You know what I mean? They've all had that personal relationship with LEC and her herd. Mm-hmm. It was our job to get it right, to get LEC's humor right and her spirit and the way with which she works right. And people that have volunteered with her have come to screenings across the country and have said, like, I was there in September, 2013, you know what I mean? And this is their film. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Gosh. I'm so happy for you. We'll spam this out to the world. We'll put all the links, obviously, for this in our show notes. But I feel like just personally, I've texted like multiple people who I've talked about elephants with to be like, watch this.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. No, thank you. It's like the least I can do. Went 500 miles with an elephant in a truck. So.
honestly, word of mouth and getting it wider and farther means so much. We're serious about it. I mean, with our iTunes and all of our digital sales, we're actually giving 10% of every sale to the Cambodia Wildlife Sanctuary to continue to rescue elephants there and also take care of provide aid for the current elephants that are there. We've got constant fundraising happening through the greater good and a partnership. And we're heart set on it.
That's exciting. I'm excited. I'm very excited for this movie. I feel like it's just going to keep being seen and bigger. So anyways,
thank you.
I feel like I can chat your ear off, but I'm sure you have, things to do. Do you have any other big things going on this week? I mean, what's the rest of your day look like?
Yeah, the rest of my day. Kodak is actually sponsoring a screening at the Arena Cine Lounge tomorrow. So they've bought out the screening and there's going to be a special event there tomorrow. Then on Thursday, actually, we have two special events that have popped up. Kat Kramer, who's been an advocate and a supporter for the film, she's going to moderate a panel on Thursday. And then the building is rallying behind a screening later in the day on Thursday. So it's really just been continuing to grow and spiral. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And then actually at the end of the month, jumping, on July 30th, actually, we're going to have our broadcast debut on Starz.
Oh.
So we're going to be far, far and wide. Yeah, I just got a text from a friend saying she saw a commercial. So I was like, please film it. Like,
she saw a commercial?
She saw a commercial.
Oh,
I was like,
exciting.
Somebody made a commercial?
So it's going to air on Starz on the 30th and then be available on iTunes.
It's going to be available on iTunes.
Cool.
We're really having a huge release with it. We're available on iTunes. It's going to be available on Starz on the 30th. And then actually on World Elephant Day, August 12th, we're going to open up and be available on all platforms and our DVD. So that's Google Play, Amazon Instant, YouTube, Vudu, PlayStation 4, however anybody wants to view it.
Yes.
It will be available. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Ashley Bell, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. Once again, Love and Bananas is available on iTunes. It's a beautiful, beautiful documentary. If you are liking the podcast, it would mean the world for you to leave a 5-star rating and review. It helps people find the show and enables us to keep making more episodes. And if you haven't already, hit subscribe on your podcast app to get new episodes downloaded to your phone. Olympic and Bundy is on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. I'm Kelly Taylor, and thank you very much for listening.